We're excited to be here. We're just going to introduce ourselves just a little bit more. And kind of how we got into the field of anxiety, why is it exciting? Well, exciting, I'm not sure that's the right word, but when I was growing up, anxiety was kind of the center of my home. My mom struggled with anxiety, and I found out later that I did as well, and now my kids do, and so it's become a big part of my life in terms of trying to deal with my own anxiety, helping my kids deal with anxiety. And I remember, it's interesting, Rolana, talking about the scriptures. I remember being in church, and there's the do not fear, don't be anxious about anything. And I thought, well, this is really great, but this doesn't work for me. And so I was able to learn a lot of different skills. I learned some things about the brain that helped me understand, wow, I need a little bit more of some things in my brain. And so anyway, that's kind of just a short intro into what has made me really passionate about helping people with anxiety.
Yeah, and for me, I didn't grow up in that kind of atmosphere, but as a younger adult, I had a period of time in my life where I did have panic and I did have anxiety and I went and got help with it and learned some good things through that, some good tools, got a better understanding of it. And so I think that's what's led me to be really excited about helping other people that struggle with anxiety. And so many do, like, especially in this area of the country. And I imagine some of you came here today kind of anxious. So, I mean, just check. What's your body telling you now? Are your shoulders up here? Are you relaxed? Or are we all feeling a little anxious? We'll do some today. My role here, mainly today, is to introduce some techniques to you so that you leave with some good tools and you've actually practiced them here. And hopefully you'll leave today more relaxed than when you walked in the door. So we hope this will be helpful for you. And there'll be a time at the end for questions.
So I'm going to start us. I'm going to take us through some just kind of information, some facts about anxiety, and we're going to just start there. So one of the things that I remember someone telling me once is, in layman's terms, anxiety is your brain won't stop running. And I don't know how many of you struggle with anxiety and are like, yeah, that's my brain. It never stops. It doesn't stop at 3 a.m. It doesn't stop at 5 a.m. It doesn't stop at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. It just constantly wants to keep running. And it's really hard. It's like that hamster wheel. It doesn't want to slow down. I also like this, I can't remember my English synonym. Is that what you call it? Yeah. false expectations appearing real. Thank you. Can you guys all hear me okay? Do I need a mic or everybody can hear me? Okay. False expectations appearing real. So anxiety lives in the irrational. It lives in the places that many people might say to you, that can't happen. Well, yeah, my anxiety tells me that's very real. That really can happen. My daughter, when she was in second or third grade, was very convinced that an airplane flying over her school was going to crash into her school. Now, most of us would say, well, of course that's not going to happen. But in her mind, in her very real anxiety, that was for sure going to happen. So many of you probably have examples of that, maybe if someone you know or yourself. But fear, false expectations appearing real. This might be another slide of what anxiety might feel like. Beware of everything. Behind every corner, there's something. I think it's also interesting, as I talk to clients, how many of us have different themes of anxiety. Like for me growing up, it was if you got the common cold, you were probably going to get brain cancer, and then you were going to die. You know, other people have things like I just explained to you about, you know, a plane, or it might be about the weather, or it might be about your health, or it might be about getting things done. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And so what you're anxious about might be very different than what the next person is anxious about. This is kind of an old school post-it notes, but this can be kind of how our brain feels. There's so many things to get done, and someone just stopped in my office the other day, and she's like, I feel like it's like this, like there's just all these things that can never get done, and we can begin to feel anxiety about how this is all going to get done and feel our brain start running. And then the very last one, your anxiety is calling you. How many of you ever felt that way? It seems like it like keeps calling. It doesn't, you know, keeps on calling. So just some facts about anxiety. Anxiety is the most common mental illness, but it's also very highly treatable. Many, many people, in fact, only 37% of people receive help for their anxiety. But it's very treatable. So 18% of people are affected, 18 and older, 7.1% of children, and 40 million people suffer from anxiety. So there is a lot of anxiety out there. One of the things I want to say to you, and I'm going to read this quote, anxiety is very normal. It is not a sign of breakage. It's a sign that a strong, healthy, magnificent brain is doing exactly what brains are meant to do, protect us from threat. So, you know, when I think about anxiety and I think about God, just anxiety and God, I think, wow, God made this body of mine to protect me from danger. My body, one of the most important things is being in survival mode, of keeping me alive, keeping me safe. And so anxiety keeps me sharp. If I didn't have a little anxiety about presenting today, I would have just come here and been like, well, I don't know what we're going to talk about. Let's just, you know, it keeps me from crossing the street without looking. It keeps me, you know, preparing for a test. And so anxiety is actually a really good thing that God gave us, keeps us safe. And your magnificent brain is doing exactly what it needs to do. We are not going to talk about good anxiety today. We are going to talk about the kind that can really paralyze us. But I think it's really important to talk about, we always kind of lump anxiety into bad. But there's actually a lot of really good things that anxiety does do for us. Where does it come from? A biopsychosocial approach. So genetically, I'm predisposed to anxiety. So it's in my family. Does it mean I'll get it? No, but I happen to, lucky me, and have passed it on to my kids. And so genetically, there may be something for you that you're prone to anxiety. And one of the things I just want to quick add to that, sometimes people in my office will say, well, that really stinks. Like, now my kids are going to have anxiety. Okay, well, none of us would wish that for anyone else. But if we ourselves are healthy people and we get the help we need, we have a much bigger gift to give the people who are our kids or who are around us to help it than, like, I think about myself. I mean, my mom had anxiety, but she didn't really know what that was. So it can be... It's not always a bad thing. And it's kind of what I feel like God uses our suffering to help us grow and to help other people. So just a note on that. Psychology, background and experiences. The things, you know, God has given you a story, a narrative. The things that have happened in your life may have brought you to being anxious. And then the last one, just social, just stressors that you have. Depending on where you're at in your life, different seasons of your life. The goal is to manage anxiety, not eliminate it. Again, we don't want to completely get rid of it, but we kind of want to take it down from, if it's at a 10, we want to take it down to a 4, from an 8 to a 3. There is some normal anxiety. Learn ways to tolerate and build ways to overcome it. So some types of anxiety. We're just going to quickly go through these just so you have an overview of some different things. And I'm not going to read them. I'm just going to go through each one of them. Generalized anxiety disorder. What if questions? What if the plane goes into the building? What if I do have brain cancer? What if, you know, I can't remember how to do that test? What if, what if, what if, what if? It kind of reminds me of the 3-year-old, right? common symptoms. Headaches, constant worry, difficult sleeping, exaggerated worry, muscle tension, and easily startled. This one is something that a lot of people who come in the office or into our offices have. You have to have it for 6 months. But yeah, it's just kind of that your brain keeps on running and has those kinds of symptoms. Separation anxiety. You know, a lot of kids have fear. There's seasons of that. There's certain times where it's appropriate. The very last part of it, the middle one, fear harm may come to themselves or attachment figures. That's what kind of separates it from just, no, I want to be with mom, because there's certain parts of that that are very normal. Panic disorder, panic attack. I don't know if any of you, likely since you're here, there are some of you who've had panic attacks. I think it's one of the worst things to experience. Racing heart, feeling weak, tingling, sense of terror, sweaty, chest pains. A lot of people end up in the ER because they have panic attacks. And they get there and the doctor says, now I think you're actually struggling with anxiety and you're having a panic attack, feeling a loss of control. And social anxiety. A lot of people have social anxiety right now. I think just due to, we don't have a lot of, I mean, this is great to have people face-to-face talking about different things, but now we have phones, and phones are great, and they also can just cause things. I think a lot of teens have social anxiety. I happen to have three teens myself, so can see where social anxiety is a big, just wondering what's it going to be like. Sometimes people who have social anxiety would never show up, unfortunately, to something like this, because being with people, wondering what they're going to have to say, wondering what others are going to say to them would keep them from being here. So one of the things that we think is that anxiety is in our brain, and then there's the rest of our body. So Mary Jean and I, she's going to do some exercises, but really want to eliminate that myth. David Grand, who is, I'll tell you a little bit more about, but he's developed this therapy called brain spotting. And he says what's in the brain is in the body, and what's in the body is in the brain. And I'm going to explain that a little more later as I describe to you what the brain actually does when you have anxiety. But often if we listen to our bodies, you know, when you have to go to the DMV and take your driver's test, oh, my stomach doesn't feel so great, or you have to perform something at work, I have a headache, or again, my stomach doesn't feel good, or my chest kind of hurts, or, you know, like Mary Jean said, my shoulders are up here, and I realize, like, oh, my shoulders are killing me, and let them down a little bit. So all of these different things, frequent headaches, sleep disturbance, we often don't pay it. We feel like we're disconnected. It's like, well, my anxiety is up here, and the rest of my body is down here. And so it's really important to realize that what's in your brain is in your body, and what's in your body is in your brain. And I'm going to explain a little bit more of that as we go on. Now I'm going to hand it over to Mary Jean and let her do some, what we're going to kind of do is do a little teaching sort of, and then a practical thing, and then a little more teaching, and so you kind of have an idea of where we're going. So.
Okay. We're starting kind of with the basics. Some of you might already, I'm going to pass the handout so that what I'm telling you, you can kind of follow along with. I, in my own life right now, have a lot of anxiety and stressful things going on. And so, there are times when I have not been sleeping well. And, or during the day, I've had to deal with things. And one of the things, the best place to start, I think, with learning to deal with anxiety is learning to pay attention to our breathing. You know, learning to be able to calm and realize that we do have a little bit of power over this anxiety, and it starts with that. It starts with noticing our breathing, noticing our body, like what's going on in our body. And the benefits of this breathing, as you can see on the paper, it does increase oxygen to the brain and to the muscles, so there's something physical going on. It stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is a system that does promote calmness and quiet. It helps to create that mind-body connection that Janie was talking about, because anxiety tends to keep us in our heads and our thoughts are spinning. There's a reduction in bodily toxins as we exhale more fully through the lungs, and an improved concentration. You know, if you're really anxious, I don't know about you, but then it's really hard to concentrate. And so the abdominal breathing can trigger a relaxation response. You know, when you go to the gym and you exercise or you do any kind of exercise, you see the benefits over the course of time. And it's the same thing with breathing. Now, I want to do an exercise with you. It's this first exercise on the page. And so one of the things I want you to do right now is just close your eyes and just notice your breath and any tension that you're feeling in your body, anywhere. Don't judge it. Don't try to make it go away. Just notice your breathing and your body, and just take a minute. And then I want you to just place your hand on your abdomen, just below your rib cage. And I want you just to inhale slowly. And as you inhale, your abdomen should rise, your chest moving only slightly. That's how you know you're taking a good breath. And I want you to do that, and after taking in a full breath, pause and exhale really slowly, feeling your body just let go. And I want you to repeat that just several times sitting there.
Do you have access to a mic?
Oh, because you can't hear me?
It's difficult.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, how was that for you? Did you feel yourself at all kind of relaxing? Could you find any tenseness in your body, that kind of thing? Yeah, yeah. And what's great is you're breathing all the time, right? You never cease breathing. So you can do this anytime, anywhere. You can do it in your car. You can do it, Is it working? You can do it in your car. You can do it sitting anywhere. And you can do it to the extent where you can be loud if you're home by yourself, really taking in a big breath and blowing it out that way. But this is a good thing to remember. I want to ask you, what would keep you from doing this on a regular basis? Just checking in throughout the day, sitting at a stoplight, sitting at your desk at work, or even playing at the playground with your children, anything. Or if you find yourself getting worked up about something, just taking a minute, oh, I know what to do. Because this really does make a difference. Okay, there's another calming breath exercise where we're going to inhale, and you can count to five on the inhale. You hold your breath, five, and then you exhale slowly to the count of five. And then you take a few normal breaths, and then you do that again. So just like everybody, just to try that on your own, breathe in five, hold five, and then breathe out. Sometimes on the exhale, with either of these breathing techniques, you might want to say out loud, or if you're somewhere and you don't want to talk out loud, just think the word relax or calm or what, something that comes to mind for you. Or it could be a phrase like this, and this is where I like to bring the psychology and spirituality together. It might be a phrase that comes to mind like, Lord have mercy, or Jesus I love you, or I know you love me, or you are my fortress, or something like that. Sometimes that scripture helps on the exhale. One of the things that I find exciting is that since the Spirit is in each breath we take, that you might sense the Spirit bringing a breath prayer to mind that comes from that stillness now that you're able to get to. And this might become a part of your rhythm and leading to what I think is pray without ceasing, as that breath prayer becomes kind of our rhythm. And we don't even really have to think about it. Mine right now is, Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. And it's kind of the whisper of my soul. And so that can be something that's great that develops from this breathing. Because this is where we can get to the place of being still and knowing God and just letting Him speak into us. He's in our breath. So He's that close to us. So I hope these will be helpful for you. Again, you're going to get the benefit of it if you do it long term. Okay, does anybody have any questions about that? Okay, you've got one tool right here.
Thank you, Mary Jean. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I have to remember how this goes. Okay. Have any of you ever experienced having maybe toast going, like start your toaster start smoking, or something else in your house that gives off a little bit of smoke and the smoke alarm goes off? Has anybody ever experienced that? Yeah. I think I remember one time, I can't even remember actually, I was thinking this morning, like it would be a much better story, Janie, if you remember what it was, but I can't remember, so I'm just going to tell you. At my house, I was cooking something, and the smoke alarm went off, and I had kids in the house, and I knew nothing was on fire, and I'm not sure how, I think our alarm was like to the fire station or something. I don't know. And all of a sudden, like, the fire people came. And I'm like, no, everything's fine. It's fine. There's nothing going on here. And my husband walked in at the same time. And it was pure chaos. But basically what it was, that something was on fire that didn't need to notify anyone, but it did. And I'm bringing that example up because there's something in your brain, it's called your amygdala. It's way in the limbic system of your brain. And I'll show you a little bit more about that. But its job is to say, is there danger? Is there danger? Kind of like the smoke alarm. It's the smoke alarm of your brain. It says, oh no, here comes danger. We got to do something. Unfortunately, though, it sometimes does that when just the toast is burning, not when the house is burning down. And people who struggle with anxiety, their amygdala sends messages all the time for the smoke alarm to go off. So I think it's a helpful just kind of way to think about what it is. So your anxious mind is just trying to protect you, however misguided it may be. So it's good that our brains, that God has made our brains to say, hey, there's danger out there, watch out. But unfortunately, sometimes it goes off far too much, too many times, and in situations where we just don't need it to go off. As I have this last year learned a ton more about our brains, there's so much mystery to this brain that God has given us, but yet there's so much that we do know about it. Each brain is a genius, containing 1 quadrillion, and I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 15 zeros behind that, connections. And Demir Damonte says there's 5 quadrillion connections. There is so much going on in your brain all the time. We have no idea. And so it's this amazing machine that continues to work for us. It's also neuroplastic, meaning that it can heal itself. So our brains are really, really amazing, really complex. And yet there's some very simple things that go on that I want to try to help you understand what is actually happening when you have anxiety. So many of you have probably heard about fight, flight, freeze. The green part there is the limbic system, and that's the part of your brain where the amygdala is in. It's a little small, I think walnut-sized guy down there. And it takes over when you're gonna go and do some presentation at work, or you're trying to get here and not everything is going as planned. It says, okay, we gotta get the smoke alarm, bing, 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 bing. We gotta get anxious here because something's going on. There's danger. We gotta do something. At the same time that that happens, your learning thinking brain, which is this part of your brain up here, goes offline. So you no longer think rationally, you no longer think logically, you can't slow things down. It gets hijacked. It goes completely offline. So actually in the learning thinking brain, I will tell you this too, so you can maybe kind of understand why sometimes you might feel like a teenager, because kids do not develop their prefrontal cortex, which is this front part of the brain, until they're 25 years old. So they think they're invincible, they think they can do anything, they don't think rationally, they don't think logically. So that part of your brain goes offline when you have, when danger is sensed. Oh, you know what, this kind of got, hold on just a second. You know what? It skipped a few of my slides. Okay, well, that's okay. So I'm gonna just go for my slides. I was having trouble with this morning. For some reason, not gonna have my prefrontal cortex go offline right now for you guys, hopefully. Where did it go? Okay, well, I'm just gonna go. Okay. All right, so basically what happens is a threat comes and your brain ends up taking, so let me go back for a second. If right now, if a mountain lion walked into this room, all of us would have a choice to make. We would fight, we would flee, or we would freeze and play dead. That's what we would do. And adrenaline and cortisol would shoot through our bodies and make your heart start beating, maybe your fingers tingling, your legs ready to go. You wouldn't have much digestion going on because your body is ready to go. That's what happened. And then in ancient times, or times before ours, people would run, or they would get rid of that cortisol and adrenaline by doing something, by movement, because that's what their body needed. They had to run, they had to fight. Now, we can have the same thing come towards us, and we would actually have to do that, or we have lots of little things every day come at us. What am I going to do about this situation? How am I going to handle this? A threat comes in, and our bodies do the same thing that they did previously, but they don't have a way to release the adrenaline and the cortisol. So we're left with all of that stuff in our bodies to figure out, okay, now what are we going to do? Which causes the anxiety to happen, muscle tension, worry, kind of our worry brain going on. I had these really great slides and I'm really bummed that they're not there, but that's okay. Let me go on to,
So basically what's happening is that your brain thinks that there's a big threat, but there's not. So what I want to do is, and I had these on the slide, I'm going to read a couple pages from this book. It's called Hey Warrior, and it's a children's book, but I tend to think that children's books sometimes are the best way to understand something because I'm really practical and maybe not quite that smart. So the book is actually about an amygdala, and this is the amygdala on the front. And the book is about making the amygdala your warrior. He is looking out for you. He is trying to keep you safe. So, your amygdala works the same way. This is after the burnt toast. It can't always tell the difference between something that might hurt you and something that won't. So what happens inside your body? When your amygdala thinks there might be something that could hurt you, it powers up your body with special fuel, including oxygen, hormones, and adrenaline. This is to make you strong, fast, and powerful in case you need to run for your life or fight it. This causes some pretty amazing things to happen inside you, but it doesn't always feel that amazing. If there is no need to run or fight, there is nothing to use up all the fuel surging through you, and it just keeps building up. This is why you feel the way you do when you have anxiety. It's your body doing what strong, healthy bodies do, just a little bit more than usual. And I'll show you guys the pictures. All of a sudden, I feel like I'm in second grade showing you pictures. When you feel anxious, your brain tells you to stop using up oxygen on strong, deep breaths so that your muscles can use it to run or fight. This makes your breathing fast and shallow. And when this happens, you might feel puffed or breathless. Your cheeks might blush red and your face might feel warm. The oxygen builds up inside you and the carbon dioxide you normally have drops. This can make you feel dizzy or confused. Those two things go a lot to the breathing that Mary Jean was talking about, really getting your body prepared for what does it feel like to have a good breath and what do you need to have a good breath. And it's sort of like she was talking about just doing exercise, building those muscles. Your heart beats faster to get the fuel to where it is needed in your body. Your heart might feel like it's pounding too hard or beating too fast. Don't worry, this is completely safe. Your heart knows exactly what it's doing. Again, it's all to protect you. The fuel you sent to your legs in case they need to run and to your arms in case they need to fight. Your arms and legs might feel tight or wobbly. Your amygdala also looks after your emotions. When you feel anxious, it means it is very active and working hard. You might burst into tears or get angry. Your body cools itself down so it doesn't overheat if it has to run or fight. You might feel a bit sweaty. Your digestive system, a part of your body around your stomach that gets the nutrients from the food you eat, shuts down the fuel it was using, can be used by your muscles for running or fighting. You might feel as though you have butterflies in your tummy. You might also feel sick as though you're about to vomit, and your mouth might go dry. So as you can see, there are very real reasons your body feels the way it does when you have anxiety. It's all because the amygdala, that fierce warrior part of your brain, is trying to protect you, even when you really don't need protecting. Your amygdala does a great job, but sometimes it works too hard. So this amazing brain that God has given us something to protect. And I love this next picture because it talks about making friends with your amygdala. I'm just going to read you this part. It takes over and starts to decide how things should be done, even though you're really the boss. Remember, it does this to protect you, but things will always run smoother when you are in charge and not your amygdala. It's a very good part of the brain, but you need to be in charge and not it. So that kind of gives you an explanation about what's happening in the brain. Does anybody have questions about that? Yes.
I'm trying to frame it. So given that we're having this response for something that is not really life-threatening, We as the society we live right now, we're experiencing this more, and I am experiencing this more, just because I'm not actually facing these threats normally.
Right.
Should I, like, I really don't know what a life-threatening situation is.
Right, most of us don't, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm just asking the question, just because we really don't know what a life-threatening situation is.
We don't, but yet our bodies were wired for survival. And so our brain thinks, ooh, something's a threat, 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 threat. And so it will take that threat and get us ready as if it is a life-threatening situation. But really, there's not a life-threatening situation. So one of the reasons why breathing can be so helpful is because it's one of the things we do have control over. Why walking or why we tell people to exercise can be helpful, because it does give us something to do to get that cortisol and adrenaline out of our bodies. Does that answer your question? Sort of? Yeah.
So I have a question. It seems like there's two things going on. So the amygdala responds to something that it perceives as a threat that isn't truly a threat.
Right.
And gets us all amped up physically. And we need to maybe find some things to do to wind our bodies back down, to release that cortisol, to calm ourselves back
down,
those things we can do. Is there also a way to get the amygdala to, like, not be threatened by things that, to retrain our thoughts to a certain extent, to tell our amygdala, that's not a threat? To cut that process off before the body goes haywire.
Mm-hmm. I think that's some of what you're going to do with the EFT stuff. Is that right? Yeah. So if you can hold that thought. Any other questions about that?
What was the name of the book you read from?
The book. It is called Hey Warrior, and it's by Karen Young. I have a slide of this at the end that you're welcome to take a picture of if you would like. I love this book. Karen Young has, she's from Australia, so you have to get it from Australia, but it is well worth it because I think it's well worth it. I hope you guys enjoyed that portion of it. One of the things that can lead to having anxiety is trauma. We sometimes think of anxiety as a standalone, but really thinking about it in the lens of trauma, I think is really important. And what is trauma? Sometimes people feel like they have to have big traumas in order to have trauma. You had trauma coming into this world. Every one of us did, to go from a safe little space to this wide, big, open world. It's a trauma. Definition of a trauma: a normal response to a set of totally abnormal experiences. It might be in how you grew up. It might be that there was some sort of abuse in your family. We all experience it. We can also have secondary trauma. We see something that we're not experiencing ourselves. Sometimes kids have parents who, there's some domestic violence going on, or not even to that degree. There's emotional verbal abuse, and so they experience this. We take that all into our bodies. We kind of like to think that, that was then, this is now, but we all have experienced a whole story of things that have happened that affect who we are, how we see the world, and then how we live within our nervous system. Everyone experiences it. It's a normal part of life. So how does anxiety fit into that? So we talked a little bit about the brain, and now I'm going to talk a little bit about your nervous system. Your nervous system is also developed to sense danger. It is always sensing what is dangerous, what is dangerous. If you've had trauma, your brain senses danger in a lot of places where there's not danger. That's why a lot of times anxiety and trauma are connected, because you've experienced a lot of things in your life that were very dangerous and that put you in danger. And so you are always scanning for something dangerous. Some of us who maybe have more of a genetic predisposition to anxiety don't have that as much, and this might be a little bit an answer to your question. The genetic component can feel a little different than if you have the psychological or the stressors, because you are constantly, if you've been abused, if you've seen terrible, awful things, if you've lived in a home where maybe you had a parent with a personality disorder or I mean, the examples could go on and on, but you're constantly, your brain is constantly looking for danger because it knows it's been there in the past and it's probably there again. So what happens is, if we think of our autonomic nervous system, first of all, our autonomic nervous system is autonomic, meaning automatic. So the three things that your nervous system takes care of are digestion, breathing, and heartbeat, your heart rate. So the only one of those that you have any control over is your breathing. So Mary Jean's thing again of, you can control that. I can't tell my heartbeat, like, okay, go down. Please go down. I mean, I might be able to sit still. I might try to be able to do that. But my breathing is the only thing that I might have control over. So again, nervous system's thing is to detect for danger. If we think about it like a ladder, and I love thinking about it like this because I think it's super helpful. On the top, we're safe, social, engaged. So I'm feeling good. I feel like I can be here. I can sit and I can be in my body. I can look at other people. I can look into your eyes. I feel safe. Sometimes that's where we are in life, for at least some moments in life, let me say that. Then we're driving through traffic, all of a sudden someone cuts us off. We immediately go to flight or fight. Now I'm mad, or I am mobilized for action. I'm agitated, I'm frantic, I'm getting overwhelmed and having a hard time keeping up. I feel anxious and irritated, the world seems dangerous, chaotic, and unfriendly. So actually yesterday I was taking my kids to school and I was in the, any of you who take kids to school know, I think parents are mostly in the mobilized, agitated, frantic space when they take kids to school. This lady, all I could see in front of me, she's like this. And so I was kind of, you know, I was looking at her nervous system thinking, okay, she's in her sympathetic activation. She is activated. She's mobilized. She wants to do something. She's not safe and social at this point. She is activated. Then we can move down to numb, collapsed, or shut down. This is the freeze stage. I'm buried under a huge load and I can't get out. I'm alone in my despair. The world is empty, dead, and dark. So what happens during the day is we go up and down this ladder. We don't stay in one spot. For me, just when my slides didn't work, I went to mobilized. Oh no, shoot, this is not working. What am I gonna do? And then I'm able to, like, okay, take a few deep breaths, move back up to safe and social. I had a situation at work not long ago where I was with a group of people and I was giving some ideas for something that I thought would be important, and I felt like nobody was really hearing what I said, and so I watched myself go into numb, collapse, shut down. So I was like, oh, forget it, none of these people really care what I think, so I'm just gonna close it all down, go in my turtle shell, and then noticed it later and was able to come up the ladder. To come up the ladder, I actually have to mobilize myself, which is the second stage, to go into my safe and social mode. Why is this important? You and I go up and down the ladder all day long. If we don't know where we are in the ladder, we can, and we will go up and down, and that's okay. But we can also get stuck in places in the ladder. You might know people who are often in flight and fight mode. They are ready to go. They're defensive. They're agitated. They're anxious. Anxious puts us in that second space a lot, sympathetic activation. And part of what Mary Jean is teaching us is, how do I get from one spot in the ladder, how do I move myself up? And so we can all have spaces and times where we're in the ladder. The other thing about trauma is you can get stuck much more easily. It's okay to go down the ladder, but it's important to come back up. In trauma, often we go down the ladder, we stay down at the bottom, or we go to mobilized, and we never get up to safe and social. And so you can imagine what that actually does to our body with all that cortisol and adrenaline running through. This is kind of another way to look at it. If we haven't discharged our traumatic stress, we can get stuck on or we can get stuck off. Stuck on is the mobilized part of the limbic system. We're agitated, we're anxious, we might be hyper, we can't relax, we're restless. Or we can get stuck off, which puts us more into the place of depression, which is kind of that freeze state. If you think about animals, they have to protect themselves. There's this great little video about a polar bear who's in his surroundings, and he gets shot down by a stunt gun, or that's probably not what it's called, but anyway, and he goes down and they tag him. Well, before he can actually get up and move again, he has to shake, he has to release. And we're really like that, but we don't often do that. We don't often release our trauma. Instead, we keep it inside and we get in that stuck off place. Or we go and we use it against maybe even ourselves or others. It's hard to go back up to safe and social. So I say all of that because I think it's important to understand anxiety can be a huge, or trauma can include anxiety. And I think it's important to understand that they go hand in hand. I want to tell you guys I want to spend a couple minutes telling you about, this is a therapy modality that both Mary Jean and I are trained in. And some of you may ask, well, how do I release the trauma that's in my body? And brain spotting is one way to do that. I want you to just think for a second about if you're talking to a friend and you say to her, when's your mom's birthday? And she goes, June 4th. I don't know if you saw my eyes go, but we do this all the time. If you talk to someone, they have to gather information somewhere, like, what was the color of your first car? It was brown. This happens, do you guys notice this in conversations all day long? Like, people don't necessarily look right at you, but they have to gather information somewhere. So we know that our visual field has a huge part in helping us gather information. With brain spotting, what we do is we actually also know that our trauma or our negative experiences are located somewhere in our visual field. So with brain spotting, where you look affects how you feel. If I told you guys right now to think of something that's mildly bothering you, you might think of it, and I said to look to your left, look to the middle, look to the right, and we would find how your body feels as well. You might say, well, my stomach kind of hurts when I think about that. Likely, where you look, there's going to be one spot where you're going to say, oh, my stomach feels like it feels worse there. Maybe not a ton worse, maybe 10% worse. And then we spend some time there. And brain spotting is actually a modality where we can release the trauma out of our bodies. It's really, really an amazing thing. So I just want to let you guys know that there is a therapy out there to help with releasing that trauma. I want to do we have about five more minutes?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, okay. I want to do just a little something with you guys, and then Mary Jean's going to do some feeling stuff. I want you to think of something for a moment that is kind of maybe has you anxious right now. Don't pick your most anxious thing. We're not going to do a therapy session. Just pick something that's kind of bothering you right now. So I'll give you just a second to think. And then what I want you to do is put your finger out in front of you like 12 to 18 inches, just like I'm doing here. And what I'm going to have you do is, first of all, I want to you to notice while your finger is up, we could have done this before, but what do you feel in your body as you think about this thing that's making you anxious?
Heart rate got faster.
Heart rate is faster. So what I'm going to have you do is I'm going to have you look at your finger. And then I'm going to say switch and have you look at the wall, the back wall or whatever. Just look through your finger. And then I'm going to say switch again, come back to your finger, switch, go to the back wall, switch finger. And then I'm just going to have you notice, try to just notice what happens as you do that. Okay? So go ahead and look at your finger to start. And switch to the back wall. And switch.
and switch. And switch. And switch. And switch. And switch. 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 And switch. Just take a minute and notice what you feel in your body after doing that. Go back to the original thing that was bothering you and just see where you might be at with that. Does anybody want to share maybe what they experienced?
Now my eyes hurt when I think about it.
Your what?
My eyes now hurt when I think about it.
Your eyes hurt when you think about it. Okay, so it's your body reacting. Mm-hmm. Do you feel calmer, the same, or more anxious about it? Okay, the same anxiety level, or?
Yeah, with the eye pain.
Okay. Okay. All right. Anybody else?
I forgot to think about it.
You forgot to think about it. And how is it when you came back to it?
A little calmer.
A little calmer. Okay.
It broke up the pattern of thinking about it.
Broke up the pattern of thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one of the reason why this can be calming, and most people that I've talked to feel calmer afterwards, is because you have six muscles that hold each of your eyeballs in place. And those muscles are directly connected to your nervous system. So when you move your eyes, and I don't know the exact biology and science behind this, but when you move your eyes, it calms down your nervous system. So it's a very quick way to help calm yourself down. I don't know what all of you experienced, and some of you, you know, it sounds like it wasn't super great for you, and that's okay. You might also try to close your eyes and open your eyes. That does the same, has a sort of same effect, which is, so we did it for about 3 minutes, and we did about 8 to 10 seconds, far, close, far, close. Another thing that you can use pretty much anywhere. I mean, you know, you can do eyes open, eyes closed. You might not want to be in a room doing this, but yeah. So, did you have a question?
Well, I was like her, so I feel more agitated because
it's okay.
My eyes.
It was bothering your eyes. Okay. Okay.
Is there a reason for that?
You know what? In brain spotting, we say it's all brain stuff. Probably what happened is there's some sort of processing for you going on, so it maybe opened it up a little bit. Okay. We don't know for sure, but... All right, well, I'm going to hand over the mic to Mary Jean to do another exercise for you guys. Oh, I forgot about this. One quick thing. I'm going to make this really fast. The doctor and medication. The little thing here, she's overworked, underappreciated, and full of anxiety, but she's fine. So many people now go, I think I heard lately there was a statistic around 60 to 70% of people who go they can't find anything wrong with, and it's stress. Brain spotting is another thing that can be really helpful to those people, but we always want to have people go to the doctor to make sure you don't have a thyroid issue, there's not something else going on that's creating anxiety for you, so that's really important. And then maybe I'll save the medication piece for after Mary Jean talks. So,
does everyone have one? Okay, thanks. Yeah. You know, since anxiety is so, can be genetic and can, it can also, you know, one of the things I like to do when a client comes into me and says they're anxious, and how do you know you're anxious, and you might do a little assessment, but then I'll ask, have you been to the doctor? Have you seen your doctor recently? Because there are some things, hypertension, thyroid issues, mitral valve prolapse, some things like that that can kind of mimic our panic, or, and people are prone to anxiety have, and sometimes we find out that really what's going on is an anxiety, it's something that can be taken care of medically. So you might want to think that, keep that in mind too, because we kind of want to rule that out. But I'm glad Janie brought up the amygdala, because that's part of, I think one of the things that I recognize a lot when I sit with people who come and have anxiety is that a lot of times it's a result of unacknowledged, repressed, or denied emotions that we're trying to keep at bay. And I'm finding that we do that all the time. We don't have time for our emotions. We got to get things done. Or, you know, we're parents of small children. I can't, who can think about me? Who can think about my emotions? You know, I just got to keep going. Or we just don't like the discomfort of what we think of as negative emotions. And so when someone comes into the office, it's often because the coping that's going on of keeping these things at bay and just avoiding them isn't working anymore. And so then anxiety is in full-blown motion. So one of the pathways to being able to deal with anxiety is being able to identify and acknowledge our feelings and be capable of dealing with them. So one of the things we're going to start out with is that very thing, is how to identify, acknowledge, and begin to break patterns that keep us constantly needing to keep negative, what we think of as negative emotions, thoughts, or feelings at bay. So the breathing exercises that I introduced earlier can be a good starting point. If you see on the front page of the packet that I gave you, you'll see there's a feeling wheel. And so many of us operate just in that center circle. We can identify feeling fearful, angry, disgusted, sad, happy, surprised. But some of the things going out, we're not familiar with. I didn't grow up in a home that was, there was a lot of emotional intelligence where I got a lot of, oh, you know, what are you feeling? Or, oh, it sounds like you're feeling sad. Or, oh, it sounds like you're feeling anxious. It just wasn't, that wasn't the language in our family. And so many of us don't really, can't identify. We just know it doesn't feel good. But if you can take something like this, when you begin to feel uncomfortable, do a little breathing. Say, where do I feel this in my body? And then we can go, okay, so this is what I'm feeling. And then we can start to unpack that a little bit. Because most of the time, I mean, think about it. If you flip over to the back of that that feeling wheel, which this feeling wheel is, you know, this can take you with your kids, with friends, with, hey, well, here's a wheel. Tell me, really, what is it that's going on here? So that's a really great tool anyway. But if you look on the back side, you'll see that what we do, so many things that we do to avoid uncomfortable emotions. And things like blaming, denying, avoiding, numbing, distracting, intellectualizing, or using humor to minimize, distract, self-harm behavior, substance use, compulsive behavior, or ritual behavior. I want you to just think about that list, and I bet if you think about it, one of those things comes to mind, at least one of those things comes to mind. Oh, I think I do that. Oh, yeah, I can see that pattern going on for me. And the thing of it is that doesn't really help you with whatever you're dealing with and whatever that, because next time when you begin to identify these emotions, the next time you'll go, oh, that's that, this is what I'm feeling. And maybe this is what I need to do about it. Instead, it puts us into action. Because a lot of times when we're feeling uncomfortable with our feeling sad, angry, you know, it's, oh, it's not good to be angry. Usually under anger, there's a soft emotion, more like fear, sadness, things like that. And so that's kind of what we need to get to. Most of the time when we have those, what we call negative feelings, they create more if they're not really looked at. And that's anxiety, shame, and guilt. You know, we go to that place of, I shouldn't feel this way, or, oh, this is bad, or I'm really angry at this person, and I know I really shouldn't be, right? And we can kind of stay stuck there. So one of the things that the breathing, that's why I wanted to introduce first, is the breathing and just taking pause can get you to a place where, okay, I do know what to do. I hate this, you know. It's all in here. It just feels all knotted up. I do know what I can do about that. I can take a minute and begin to breathe. I can pull out my feeling wheel, even if it's at the end of the day. You have to do this. Pull out my feeling wheel, and I can figure out, where in my body am I feeling this? What is it that I'm feeling? What's my go-to? What am I feeling myself compelled to do? You know, is it go get something from the refrigerator? Is it, am I going to yell at my kids? Am I going to, there's a go-to, or in my mind, I'm blaming, or I'm building something up, or I'm shaming myself. You know, if you pay attention, this will be something, if you pay attention, you'll learn about yourself and some of your patterns. And this is the kind of thing that I think that when God says, you know, we put away the old and we put on the new, this is putting away the old. If we can recognize these feelings, accept them, what do I want to do with them, then we can break some of these old patterns that get in the way of life, of relationships, and become new. And that's just the spiritual aspect of this. So one of the things that I'm going to introduce to you is something called emotional focus therapy, and it's a modality that you can use. Studies have shown it is a mixture of it's a tapping, and it's a combination of ancient Chinese acupressure, psychology, and biology. It's a technique that can alter your brain, your energy system, and your body. The tapping, it sends signals to the stress centers of the midbrain, not mediated again by that logical executive functioning of the front part of your brain. And then it does, like Janie was talking about, it does have access to the amygdala, the part of the brain that initiates the body's fight, flight, freeze mechanism. And it does that through these meridian points in your body. And it also can help, she talked about the hormones that flow into the body. It does help reduce the amount of cortisol. That gets shot into our bodies when we undergo stress. And there's been studies on this. There's been slow acceptance with people because there weren't a whole lot of studies behind it. But now, with more studies behind it, they have really found it has been helpful with like people that have been survived the genocides in Rwanda. And now it's working really well with war veterans that have PTSD, which is some of that trauma that Janie was talking about. So I'm going to kind of walk you through the steps of this, and then I'm going to give you time to get some space in the room for you just to kind of have your own experience with this, and help you to not feel so self-conscious about this. But we're going to walk through it, and then I'm going to give you some time to actually practice it so that you can get a feel for what it's like. It, again, is one of those things that if you can incorporate this in your, if you really think to do this, then it can really help you manage anxiety and whatever other emotion that you may be experiencing. So first of all, let's go over the meridian points. If you go to that page that has the diagram on it, we have these meridian points throughout our body. How do we know about that? Well, acupuncture has shown us that. Now this is, we don't have to use needles in what we're doing, so that's even better. But they have located these meridian points throughout the body. And again, gosh, we have this amazing body that God created. And this knowledge, what I love is that God gives us this knowledge about our bodies so that we can live in this fallen, crazy world and be, so that our relationship with Him can thrive and with others, and we can be about in this world what He created us to be about. And so this is, again, one of those things that we've learned about the body that can be really, really helpful. So there's these meridian points, and the first one that you're going to be able to starting with is like this karate chop to the palm of your hand, like that, just a karate chop, okay? The next one you'll see you're going to go down, and it's this space here between your eyes here. And you're going to use two fingers there to tap. Okay? The next one will be at the side of the eye, out here. Use both your hand, both on both sides of your face. And it's the same thing. It's tapping. And then you're going to go under your eye, under there. And then you go under your nose. You're going to go to your chin. And then you're going to go right under your collarbone. And if you put your fingers there, you might have to play with it a little bit, but you're going to find a spot. If you even just put your finger, you're going to feel a spot that kind of feels a little different right underneath your collarbone. And you're going to tap there. The next one is under your arms. And that's where you're going to use your four fingers to tap. Okay? And you do that under each arm. I know, it feels kind of silly, right? But it's going to be helpful. Again, it's one of those things that if you do it, you know, over again, you get used to it, I think you're going to see a difference. So now you've got the meridian points. And like a lot of things, they say, don't try this at home. I really want you guys to try this at home. I really want you to take this and use this and see what how it might be helpful to you. I'm going to do what Janie did, and maybe you can take that same issue that you thought of earlier, something that's troubling you or disturbing you right now, but not anything on a grand level, because again, we're not going to do therapy. But what I will say is that at the end of our time today, we're going to do a relaxation exercise, so you should leave here feeling pretty relaxed. But right now, I want you to just kind of identify that. If you need to write something down, write it down. But think about an issue. And it has to be something. It can't be that involves someone else. Okay, so take this. I have a friend who's sick that I'm really worried about. Okay, let's not go with the friend. Okay, I'm really worried. I'm really afraid. Or I'm really sad. Okay, make it about yourself. Okay, it's got to be your feelings about something. And then you need to rate the magnitude of that feeling. And then what you're going to do is establish a setup statement. Even though I have this sadness, even though I have this anger, even though I have this fear, the next part of this, and I kind of changed this up a little bit, it says, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Because sometimes, quite frankly, we really don't. But what we can say, hope we can say, is I am deeply and completely loved by God. I am deeply loved by my spouse. I am completely loved by my children. I'm completely safe, if that fits. Something that fits in there for you. And then you're going to want to select a reminder phrase. For example, just like the sadness that my mom is sick. The fear I have of this test I'm going to take. You know, something like that. So then you're going to start on your karate chop point, and you're going to go down, and you're going to do 5 to 7 taps on each meridian spot, okay? And do it, you know, 1 to 2 times, and kind of check in with yourself. Are you still feeling the intensity of it? Kind of what you did with the convergence. And then I want you to tap. I'm going to bring you guys back together, and you're going to tell me about your experience, anyone who wants to share. But before we do that, let me hear questions. And I'll walk around, and if you have questions or something you want to ask me. Yeah?
How would you describe a meridian? Like, what is a meridian?
It's an energy point in your body that somehow impacts the, you know, the flow of energy in your body. And,
So is it like a nervous system thing? Is it a series of nerves that are one to the other?
Yeah. It has to be, because it does impact the parasympathetic system. The parasympathetic system is what calms down the activation. So it has to. Yeah. What else? Good question. Anything else? Okay. So I'm going to get you guys, you can move your chairs to different parts of the room, right? And just, and I'm going to give you about 5-6 minutes just to kind of experience this on your own. And then you're going to come back and we're going to talk about it, okay? So get your chairs and move. And I want to see some tapping going on. Of course, you can opt out, but hope you'll try it. Okay, finish it out and just we'll come back together again. Okay, for those of you who tried it, are you willing just to share something about what that was like? Yes.
This is a typical anxiety for me. Am I doing it right?
Oh.
That's anything that somebody says, you know, try this, do this, am I doing it right? Uh-huh. The whole time I'm trying to think, am I hitting the right spot? Am I doing it right?
Well, if you follow that sheet and you do that, you're going to be doing it right. And then you have to expect your body to do the rest.
Is it an exact point or sort of a general place?
No, I think it's this general place. You're not the side of your eyes here. Okay. I don't think you're not, yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of like, you've got to let your body knows. And so, and when you experiment with it, and when you start to feel some relief, I think you're going to go, okay, there it is, now I've got it, now I know. And I think the more you use it, the more that happens, right? So it's just like learning anything new. Experiment with it. And did anybody, what about anybody else? Anybody else want to, yeah?
I resorted to this a couple of years ago when I was having major anxiety. And I was looking on the internet, like, what do? I don't want to take meds. And I'm like the most skeptical person. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, this is still not going to work. And like within like a couple minutes of doing it, I'm like, oh my gosh, my cortisol rushes are like, calm down. And I don't even know, you know, like, so I was all about, oh, well, maybe it's the placebo effect. But I've done it since. And like, you know, biologically, I still can't figure out why it's working.
Yeah.
I like to figure that out. But it's been really helpful.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I found trying to recite the thing and do the tapping at the same time. I can do both. Like it's too
You'll have to practice.
Like I couldn't come up with my phrase and then remember it and then tap. It
takes practice.
Yeah, it was. I'd rather just tap.
Short phrase.
Yeah, she said having a very short phrase.
Like having a full sentence is hard, but having a very short phrase.
Like maybe just trust Jesus.
Yeah.
Just like two words as opposed three words.
Yeah. Right. Or just the emotion that you're feeling. I have this emotion, but I'm totally loved by God. And then start there. And then the emotion and the loved by God, you know, just kind of in tandem with that, I think. But this is going to, I didn't expect that you would go out of your experts on this today. Because it does. It takes, sometimes I have to remind myself. And so I think it's just the kind of thing that you practice over and over again. And what I'm doing with the clients who come in to see me is this, we do this when they get really activated in a session, is we'll go there. Okay, well, let's tap, you know, let's figure out what the emotion is, and then let's go there and let's do that. So that actually happens in the office. Okay? Anything else? Yeah.
I found like it helps center me onto the truth of this anxiety isn't as important as my body's making it to be. Mm. And then with both exercises, like my body is starting to realize that. Like it's a 3 out of 10, not a 6 or 8 out of 10.
Okay, good, yeah. The other point that I want to make here is, and really it does take practice, so don't think, try it a few times, oh, that doesn't work. But stay with it. It's kind of like that exercise or that workout. You're working out for your emotional, mental health. The other one thing I want to say, and because someone brought it up, and I think you're going to be going into this next, but medication. I'm not one that's going to push medication on anybody. I think we're an over medicated society for sure. However, when Jesus healed people in the Bible, he used different ways. Sometimes someone just touched his cloak and they were healed. Sometimes he had them put water and mud together and they could be healed. So healing doesn't always take the same route. But I think God's given us wisdom about our brain. So that if your life, you're a mom and you've got young kids and you're anxious and having panic, maybe a time for, and nothing's working, that may be your route to be able to settle enough to learn some good tools to manage your anxiety. So that's just a thought. I feel like in some cases that's really, really important. And that's what God's given us knowledge about the brain to be able to deal with it in that way. For quality of life, relationship with him, and relationship with others.
I'm not going to say anything more about it because we
are not medication experts. We're therapist experts. So, and I think she kind of covered it. I will say to your saying, am I doing this right? That is a very typical response for people who have anxiety. Am I doing this right? I don't know. Am I doing this right? Or medication? I can't take medication. I'm too worried about, what's going to happen. So
I wanted to just quickly, this is kind of a long list. I'm not going to read them all. You guys can take a look. I'll just highlight. When do I need to go see a therapist? When do I need to refer someone to see a therapist? Drugs or alcohol can be medications people use to cope. Irritation and anger, grieving, physical or emotional trauma, other signs of depression, anxiety. We didn't really talk about depression today, but anxiety and depression tend to go hand in hand. You can't do the things you like to do anymore. Sometimes anxiety can be very paralyzing, and doctors can't explain the symptoms. A person has tried everything but still in the same position, and you can't get out of a mental rut. Just kind of that's where you're at. So just that quick list. I'm going to actually send Rolana my slides, and then you guys can get those from her or whatever. So want to quickly go through what can be helpful to an anxious person. What do I say to my child who's anxious? What do I say to others who are anxious? Oftentimes we say, don't worry. Well, any of you who are in here who have anxiety know that is not the least helpful. I am worried. I would have done something a long time ago if I didn't want to get worried, be worried about it. A better response might be, you seem worried. Can we talk more about that? To child, friend. It's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal. My brain has made it a big stinking deal. It's a big deal. I can see you're feeling anxious about this. Can we take some deep breaths together? I created these slides for kids, for parents, for kids, so you may have to adjust a little bit for a friend or whatever, but you'll be fine. I'm here with you. How many of you have said in your somebody has said in your anxiety, you'll be fine. It's no big deal. They might say all those things in the same, you know, breath. there's nothing to be worried about. Well, you might think that, but you seem whatever. Can we talk more about that? You seem worried. You seem distressed. You seem... I'll do it. Sometimes we just want to take it away from somebody else. Well, you have too much anxiety, so I'll just do it. I know you feel anxious, and I also know that you can do it. I'm here to support you. So we send the can-do message to that other person that your anxiety doesn't have to paralyze you. It's all in your head. That's what people really like to say, or they think it at least. They keep it in their head. It sounds like your worry brain is really loud right now. Again, I created this for kids, but I do think that there is a, you know, there's a, that worry part of you is really speaking loudly right now. It can be another helpful thing to say to someone. Do we want to go with questions?
And then we'll do the progressive.
Okay, that sounds good. So I want to just open up to questions, things you might have experienced while we did it. It doesn't have to be questions. It can be comments. Just give some time for that. And then Mary Jean will end us with a progressive muscle relaxation exercise. One other thing I did want to say is to the medication piece, as I'm thinking about it, serotonin is the thing in your brain that you may not have enough of if it's a genetic component, and so that's where medication can be important. It's sort of like, you know, I need medication to keep my blood pressure low, or, you know, I need glasses to help my eyes. It's like, well, I need a little, my brain is just, for whatever reason, I didn't get quite enough of that, and that helps stabilize me a bit. So that was just one other thing I was thinking about medication. But about anything we've done, said, questions, comments, things you might wonder about. Yeah, I'm going to just take the... Do we have another mic so people can hear the questions or not? If we don't, it's fine. Okay, I'll try to repeat the question.
That you're in your therapist, so you don't do the medication side, which would be a psychiatrist. How do you find working between those two? So as a parent who's helping someone, you know, and working between those two, how do you get them to talk, or how do you normally interact with, say, a psychiatrist if you know that your person is that's come to see you is also seeing a psychiatrist for medication?
Give me answers.
Well,
we have to get a release. Confidentiality is important. And then, depending on what the child's needs are, I like to try to begin a relationship with a psychiatrist so we can continue to talk about, check in every once in a while, You know, how do you notice so-and-so is doing? I find that I typically have more information just because I'm seeing the child on a regular basis, whereas psychiatrists, you know, just don't see them as often. Is there anything else specifically that you're asking? Or every psychiatrist and every therapist is different. So I will say that, you know, I mean, different personalities.
To want to get you guys to talk. I mean, I feel like it's a triangle, and I feel like I'm the only point.
That's frustrating.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. And it's even more complicated when you're, it's not a child, it's an adult now, mm-hmm. right? Since they turn 18, you lose all rights.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
It gets even more complicated. That. So now it's, yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, so it's perfectly normal then to try.
It is normal for them. It's typical for them to talk to one another, but sometimes depending on either or, it can be more difficult. I will tell you just personally, I have some psychiatrists that return my calls super easy, others where it's much more difficult to get in contact with and, you know, questions. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I would say this, and I'll say this about therapists, psychiatrists, doctors, and I know it's our healthcare system's kind of a challenge, but I feel like you don't fit with a therapist, find one you fit with. Psychiatrist, find one you fit with. We both know and refer to psychiatrists that we feel are gonna be that way, that are gonna interface with us and be communicative as that they need to be with their clients. So, yeah. Yes?
Do you have a series of questions that aren't really related to the tapping that you might tell a client? Like, I've heard, what's the worst case scenario? You know, ask yourself these questions. Or is there any kind of list that you can go through?
Well, I would say this, what we really try to get to, and sometimes it takes a bit of time, what's the worst thing about this to you? And where are you feeling that in your body right now? And what's your body saying to you about this? What's your brain telling you about this? You know, those kinds of things. Because we're really trying to get you to sink in to our body tells us stuff all of the time and we don't pay attention. We are so on the go. And that's why I think the breathing is so important, because it settles you down. And sometimes we find if we pay attention, we realize we're having really shallow breath, or we're holding our breath, or our shoulders are here. Or we've been walking around with this stomach ache for days. We're not paying attention to it. We need to pay more attention to these bodies God gave us.
Are you looking for a list? Is that kind of, or does that answer your question? Or?
Yeah, I guess it's more related to body. I guess mm-hmm. your way of thinking mm-hmm. is like checking.
What color is it?
Rather than
what like shape it? Is it? What is it, you know, name it. What color, you know, those kinds of things. Any other questions? Yes.
So what if there's something that is like legitimately scary? Like it's not necessarily an irrational fear, but you think about it too frequently. Like the amount of mental energy you give to it is just too high. But you can't tell yourself this isn't frightening. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of an so. Give me. Do you have something right off the top of your head?
And that's the case, right? You've had some physical issues. You've had a test. You're waiting for the results, and so you are going to think about it. And there's some reason maybe to be afraid, right? So I think where this comes in is sitting down. Okay, I'm accepting that I'm afraid. There is fear here. I'm not trying to fight it. And it fits with what I'm going through. You know, what do I want to do with this fear? You know, one of the things we didn't get to cover today, which is important, and you can get them, like, we had some resources here. Like, I brought the Anxiety and Phobia Workbook by Edwin J. Byrne. And in it has a lot of things, and one of the chapters is on like self-talk and beliefs, and how what we tell ourselves about something impacts how we feel and how we behave. So that's another piece of it. There's a anxiety and depression workbook. And you can take pictures of these after if you'd like. But all of those things matter. You know, what am I telling it myself? There are other things like this, tricks you can do, like worry. I'm going to worry about this. I'm going to really think about this and let my fear just be there. And I'm going to breathe for about 10 minutes this morning. And then I'm going to get up and go do something. Right? Like, just give yourself permission. When we're overwhelmed with feelings or we're too in our head, you got to think in terms of balancing out the doing and thinking and feeling. Am I overwhelmed with my feelings right now? Okay, take a minute. I'll acknowledge them and sit with them. I'll breathe. And then maybe I need to start working on a project, or I need to go for a walk, or I need, you know, to get into one of those different spaces.
One other thing, and you covered this a little bit, but is thinking about not reacting and judging our feelings. We tend to go like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't feel that way, or oh, you shouldn't, you know, kind of judge ourselves for it. Why am I feeling this way? And really moving into curiosity and noticing instead. Okay, I'm feeling really scared about whatever it might be. Where do I feel that in my body? And so reacting and judging can really get in our way, because many of us tend to just think. I actually was reading this morning that there's like 34,000 emotions. And so if you think about all of those things that are happening all the time, but just noticing it, being curious about it, that again is a muscle that you build. It's not, you know, it's not something that happens right away. It's time. Because when you notice it and you're curious about it, it becomes kind of outside of you versus taking you over. Okay, I'm feeling really anxious about this right now. Okay, my stomach is butterflies, like, just doesn't feel very good. Okay.
Or sometimes asking yourself the question, is it, am I telling myself the truth about this? Am I jumping to conclusions? Is this what I want to think about right now because it's making me feel this way? Is there something else I want to think about that can, that's the biggest choice I think we have, and I think that's addressed when God talks about renewing our mind, paying attention to our what we're thinking. Am I telling myself the truth? And there's all sort of distorted thinking, which I think should be in our education system, and is not, about the way we think, and that impacts how we feel. So is it all of that helpful in any way? Or is there more?
Perhaps I need to schedule some therapy sessions.
Yeah, we're human. And one of the things I love is sometimes I will say to Janie something, or might be feeling some way about something, and she'll say, well, that sounds really human. Mm-hmm. It's a human struggle we're all having. And I've felt that way before. Right? We're dealing with all of this. So we can do it together, too.
Any other? We have maybe, I don't know, time for one or two more questions, and then we're going to do our progressive relaxation. Anybody else?
Can I just share something that has helped me? Mm-hmm. So I went through a period of depression, anxiety, and I was seeing therapists for a couple of months, and what has really helped me, I know they all have different schools, so I don't know if this is in line with, but it's the cognitive behavior therapy. And the book the therapist had me read was Feeling Good by David Burns. Mm-hmm. So it's more a systematic, it has questions to ask. You mentioned about distorted thinking, so kind of Janet's question about even before you interpret it as a threat, and the questions are, you know, like, are you magnifying the problem? Are you fortune telling? You know, I'm going to die if this and that happens. So it's just, it helped me cognitively to kind of go through those, okay, check marks. Okay, is this magnifying? Is this cognitive? And
before I even get to the emotional part. But obviously, talking about it is easier than practicing it. But yeah, so that's helped me a lot.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Okay, so if there's no more questions, I want to quick go through the resource piece a minute, and then we'll do... So I put our pictures, our phone numbers, and our emails up here. If you guys want to take a picture of that, we decided not to put it on paper, because if you're anything like me, I'll put it on paper and then it's gone. I have no idea where it is. So I'll come back to this later.
And we don't want to be gone.
Yeah, you might want it gone, and that's fine too. So there's that, and then there's a couple apps that I think are helpful. The What's Up app has grounding exercises on it. It has a lot of information about anxiety, I think depression as well. Things like deliberate thinking, think of five states right now. Think of, and our brain can't worry and do deliberate thinking at the same time. So it's helpful to do that. And then Stop, Breathe, and Think. I think that there's some child stuff on there. Oh, yeah, it says, oh, they actually both say 4+. So anyway, you can check it out. This is the Hey Warrior book. Again, you can take a picture of this if you want. This book that I read out of, as well as the Anxiety and Phobia Workbook, which is what Mary Jean just showed you. This I really like because you don't have to think or count. It's like you go down and then as it goes up, you inhale. And then you exhale. If you do breathe and sink, if you Google breathe and sink, it will take you to there if that's something you're interested in. And then you can also take a picture of this. I just threw this in, grounding techniques. Just taking your five senses, what do I smell right now, what do I taste, can really just kind of bring you to the present moment. Let me see if there's anything else. I think that's it. So if you want to see a certain slide, we can leave those up here. But otherwise, Mary Jean's going to do the muscle relaxation, and then that will be it.
I'd like everybody to make sure your cell phones aren't going to ring, and there's not going to be... I'm going to turn off one of these lights because I kind of want this just to be, we're going to mellow out here. And I'm going to use the microphone. I do this with trepidation because in my office when we're doing this, my voice is pretty kind of low. I try to keep it calm because that's really important. But we'll try this, see how it works. So I want you to just, I feel like I need a chair. I'm going to use this chair. Okay, so I'm just going to ask you to, can you hear me? Okay, I'm going to ask you to just close your eyes. Take a few of those deep abdominal breaths. Just let yourself settle back into the chair or the sofa or wherever you happen to be right now. Just making yourself fully comfortable. Let this be a time just for yourself, putting aside all worries and concerns of this day, and making this a time just for you, letting each part of your body begin to relax, starting with your feet. Just imagine your feet letting go and relaxing right now. Letting go of any excess tension in your feet. Just imagine it draining away. And as your feet are relaxing, imagine relaxation moving up into your calves. Let the muscles in your calves unwind, loosen up, and let go. Allow any tension you're feeling in your calves to just drain away easily and quickly. And as your calves are relaxing, allow relaxation to move up into your thighs, letting the muscles in your thighs unwind and smooth out and relax completely. You might begin to feel your legs from your waist down to your feet become more and more relaxed. You might notice your legs becoming heavy as they relax more and more. Continuing now to let the relaxation move into your hips. Feeling any excess tension in your hips dissolve and flow away. And soon you might allow relaxation to move into your stomach area. Just letting go of any strain or uncomfortableness in your stomach. Let it all go right now. Imagining deep sensations of relaxation spreading all around your stomach. And continue to allow the relaxation to move up into your chest. All the muscles in your chest can unwind and loosen up and let go. Each time you exhale, you might imagine breathing away any remaining tension in your chest until your chest feels completely relaxed. And you find it easier to enjoy the good feeling of relaxation as it deepens and develops throughout your chest, stomach area, and your legs. Then you might allow the relaxation to move into your shoulders. Just letting deep sensations of calmness and relaxation spread all through the muscles of your shoulders. Allowing them to drop. Allowing them to feel completely relaxed. And you might now allow the relaxation in your shoulders to move down into your arms, spreading into your upper arms, down into your elbows and forearms, and finally all the way down to your wrists and hands. Letting your arms relax, enjoying the good feeling of relaxation, putting aside any worries, any uncomfortable, unpleasant thoughts right now, letting yourself be totally in the present moment as you let yourself relax more and more. Now allow that relaxation moving to your neck now. all the muscles in your neck just unwind, smooth out, and relax. Just imagine the muscles in your neck loosening up just like a knotted cord being unraveled. And allow that relaxation to move into your chin and jaws, allowing your jaws to relax. Relax and loosen up. And as they are relaxing, you can imagine relaxation moving to the area around your eyes. Any tension around your eyes can just dissipate and flow away as you allow your eyes to relax completely. Any eye strain just dissolves now, and your eyes can fully relax. Now let your forehead relax too, letting the muscles in your forehead smooth out and relax completely. Just enjoy the good feeling of relaxation all over now, letting yourself drift deeper and deeper into quietness and peace. Getting more and more in touch with that place deep inside of perfect stillness and serenity. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Join us back in the room. How was that? I did this one time. I have grown kids, grandkids, and when the babies were little, they came one Christmas. And on Christmas Eve, I said, I have a gift for you guys, the adults. And we went through this relaxation exercise. They were all asleep by the time we finished. So I hope that was good for you. I hope you were able to relax, and we've had you leave feeling more relaxed than when you came in. So, you know what? I bet you can find one. Now, I meant to say that you could record it. I do that with my clients. I let them. It and they do that and take that home. You can find those kinds of things online, so it should be good.
Okay, I have a quick question. You're showing some apps that were about meditation and things like that. Do you know of any Christian meditation, either websites or, because I find that when, you know, even when I'm doing yoga or whatever, there's just a lot of like weird spiritual stuff that people say, and you just have to kind of block it out, but it would be nice to be able to like listen to a Christian meditation and not have to block all the weirdness out.
I will say I don't have an answer to your question except to say that I know the What's Up app is not, I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. It's not a Christian app, but it also doesn't have the weird stuff. I don't know of one. Not off the top of my head, I'd have to do some
searching.
All right, for the recording, the question was if there's a Christian app or meditation thing. We do not have an answer yet, but if you have one, let us know. Thank you, Janie and Mary Jean. I'm going to try to compile an email with all the links of the books and the slides and send that out in the next few days, and the recording as well, so you can re-listen to any part of it or pass it on to someone you know who needs who needs it as well. But that email will only get to you if you registered, which I think everyone here did. But if I don't have your email, then please come and see me beforehand so you can get all of that to take home, because there's a lot of information. So thank you again so much. There's snacks in the back that you can take if you want your lunch. And we're grateful that you guys were able to come. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for spending the morning with us.